Welcome to the Yoga Hour, offering insights and practices for spiritually conscious living in today's world. Here is your host, Dr. Laurel Trujillo.
Welcome to the Yoga Hour, where we talk about yoga in all its depth and breadth as a path to spiritually conscious, fulfilled living in today's world. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, host and producer of the show. Today, we're going to be discussing your luminous self and how yoga-based practices, meditations, and self-inquiry questions can help guide the inward journey. I'm really fortunate to be joined today by Tracy Stanley. Tracy is the author of the best-selling book, Radiant Rest, as well as the book we are going to be discussing today, The Luminous Self, Sacred Yogic Practices and Rituals to Remember Who You Are. Tracy shares teachings that are inspired by more than 20 years of study in the tradition of the Himalayan Masters and Sri Vidya Tantra. She is the creatrix of the Empowered Life Self-Inquiry Oracle Deck and host of Radiant Rest Podcast, which celebrates the practices, teachers, and traditions that prioritize the rituals of rest, sacred dreaming, and self-care. You can find out more about Tracy Stanley at her website, tracystanley.com. Tracy is spelled T-R-A-C-E-E, Stanley, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y, tracystanley.com. She is also on Facebook at Tracy Stanley-Empowered Life and Instagram at Tracy underscore Stanley. Those links will be on our website. You can find them. You can also find her on Substack, as above, so below. Welcome to the Yoga Hour, Tracy Stanley. I'm really delighted you could join me today on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Laurel. I'm happy to be here.
So before we begin our dialogue about self-remembrance, let's begin with a moment of contemplation, a moment of just being right here and right now. Let's begin by just bringing our attention to our bodies, just feeling our bodies in space. Whatever we're doing, whether we're sitting or standing, walking or driving, just feeling our bodies and turning our attention to the surfaces that support our weight. Just feeling our weight in the chair if we're sitting or driving. And now turning our attention to the breath and just noticing as we take a fully conscious breath, the next inhale and exhale. On the next inhale, really feeling that cool air in the nostrils. And on the exhale, feeling how now that air is warmer as it passes out through the nose. And just staying with our breath, just feeling each inhale and each exhale. Here is something to contemplate, a quote from Ellen Grace O'Brien from her book, Living for the Sake of the Soul. Bliss arises from the soul. This unconditional joy is not emotion. It is the flowering of self-knowledge, capital S, self-knowledge, that frees us from fear, envy, grief, or greed. The darkness of ignorance flees in the light of self-knowledge. Bliss arises from the soul. This unconditional joy is not emotion. It is the flowering of self-knowledge that frees us from fear, envy, grief, or greed. The darkness of ignorance flees in the light of self-knowledge. Om. Oh. Once again, welcome to the Yoga Hour, Tracy Stanley. As I mentioned, today we're going to be discussing your book, The Luminous Self, Sacred Yogic Practices and Rituals to Remember Who You Are. So I wanted to start right there. What inspired you to write this book about the sacred path to transformation and self-remembrance?
Thank you for that question. And it's the perfect quote that you just read, right?
We try to aim for that.
Because my experience with yoga over the last 30 years has been a gentle, mostly gentle, revealing and awakening of self-knowledge. And I feel like that is the path of self-knowledge. Over the many years that I have been fortunate enough to study with some of the teachers in the Himalayan tradition, the tradition of Sri Vidya, and other teachers in different traditions, I've just been able to receive so many practices. And there have been several practices that have been the most transformative, the most awakening, the most kind of creating the most tapas within me. And I really wanted to share those practices in a way that felt accessible, in a way that was anchored in stories that were relatable from a householder, because a lot of times we get these practices or we read about the practices and they're kind of written in a twilight language. And I really feel like we're in a time right now where we really need to have access to practices that can quickly help us to transform if we're devoted to them, because we're in such chaotic times right now.
Well, that's very well said. So I was really impressed with the way you set up your book. Each chapter includes yoga philosophy, supportive yogic practices, and also community connection. It's very conducive, I thought, to the self-inquiry process to lead the reader to what you describe as the luminous self. So let's begin there with the title of your book. What did you mean, or what do you mean by the luminous self?
Yeah, you know, there's so many practices in Tantra that guide you back to this place within the cave of the heart. And I think in part of the book, I talk about coming across Sutra 136 that talks about this place inside of us that is effulgent and luminous and eternal and is beyond all sorrow and beyond all conditioning. And when I first read that, I was very early into my yoga practice, probably 3 to 4 years into yoga. And I had just been doing power yoga, physical yoga, didn't know anything about yogic philosophy. And I had picked up this book. It was a translation from Mukunda Stiles, I believe. And when I read that, I thought, oh, wait a second. There's a place inside of me that is beyond all sorrow, that is eternally joyful and radiant. I want to know more about this place. How do I find it? And I think I might not be doing the right kind of yoga to find it. So I feel like I need to go and deepen my study a little bit. And it was really that reading of that particular sutra that led me to become a seeker and to find these practices from traditions and teachers from these traditions that I felt could lead me towards the promise of yoga. And so what I discovered over time, being given various practices and doing various sadhanas, is that there is this place within us that is luminous. And we all have it. It's just veiled from our awareness. And I really feel like part of our purpose in life is to continue to unveil all the layers that cover this luminosity so that we can know who we really are.
Yeah, it's just so beautifully said. I wanted to mention this kind of reminded me of these, my teacher, Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, who's the founder of this podcast and is still the spiritual director. She wrote a series of short sutras that address this concept, which actually you start with the age-old question, who am I, right? Anyway, her four sutras are very short, but very meaningful to me. So she starts, it is, we are it, we forget, and we remember. Those are the four. So it's they're so easy to remember, and it's a really nice, it's just a really nice touch, you know, way to touch base, kind of saying the same thing that you just did, touching into that, you know, luminosity that we all have. And I just wanted to comment that it's so interesting to me that yoga is so popular in the United States, and yet most people think about it in such a limited way, you know, as just the asanas, like that's all it has to offer. And so that's one of the reasons, again, I just, you know, welcome your book and books like yours, you know, that really try and expand people's awareness and understanding that there's so much more there for people. It's kind of what our whole podcast is about, you know, is how much more there is there, you know, to yoga. Everyone has patterns, behaviors, and habits in life. And you talk about this in the book. Of course, some of those habits are positive, some are neutral, and some are negative. And these patterns in yoga are called samskaras in Sanskrit, that are subtle impressions from past actions. Noticing these habit patterns and conditioning can be a point of focus for refining the mind and coming to a place of clearer perception. How do you see samskaras affecting our spiritual journey?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I would say that for me, my samskaras have been a portal into deeper awakening once I became aware of them, right? Once I became aware that there is something known as a vritti samskara chakra or a karma chakra that is going to continue producing the same lessons and the same outcomes until we really take a moment to look at why, right? And I think that when we kind of understand that the samskaras are these impressions that kind of come onto, let's say, our windshield, right? And they start to accumulate, and we're not doing much to kind of clear the accumulation off. It becomes a coloring. We start to see the world through that coloring. We're not really seeing the world as it is. And so we get to this place where we forget, right? As we're talking about the forgetting, we forget. And in that forgetting, we begin to believe that we are the coloring, that we are the impressions. Mm-hmm. And it feels like yoga is the thing that starts to clear off the windshield a little bit so that we can start to see clearer, right? And if we don't stay with some sort of continuous awareness or devoted practice, at some point we forget. We're always going to have some scars. There's always going to be some scars that we're going to file as good, bad, or neutral. But if we start to shift our awareness towards a devoted practice, then the samskaras that we're creating are samskaras that hopefully lead us to a path of awakening as opposed to the path of forgetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I like the analogy of samskaras as sort of clouding the windshield and these practices as power washing. Power washing the windshield. I thought that was a great image. Did you want to say more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really an analogy that someone had given me a long time ago, and it really stuck with me. And then I started to kind of build on it because I started thinking about what happens if you get a brand new car and you have this beautiful car that's nice and shiny and it has a beautiful clear windshield. And then you go on a long road trip, and we think about that long road trip as the road trip of life. And anybody who's been on a road trip knows that the first thing that happens most of the time is you get some bug splats on your windscreen. And if we think about those bug splats as the impressions and you never cleaning off the windscreen, you notice that, oh, eventually you're not going to be able to see. Right. And I felt like that is something that people can really relate to, because most of us have been in that situation where then you get to the gas station and you get the squeegee and there's no water. Right. So you don't have any tools to actually clean off the windscreen. And then maybe you try to use the windshield wipers and it smears everything.
Right.
And so we have to have the right tools right? And we need to know when to use the tools and how to use the tools, and the tools being the practices, whether that is a practice of meditation or mantra or kriya, whatever the practice is, those practices are there to help us to clear the windscreen so we can see the true nature of definitely leading us to who we are, but also really highlighting who we are not. Because we're not the impressions and we're not the coloring.
Right, right. Absolutely. So one of the things I really appreciate about your book and about having another knowledgeable yogi on the program. Sometimes, you know, we have people who we talk about yoga, but we talk about it from their, you know, perspective, whether it be Buddhist or like last time or recently I had on a guest who was a Tai Chi master. So anyway, we talk about lots of different things on the show for spiritually conscious living, but it's really fun to have, you know, someone from the yoga tradition because we can talk more deeply about some of the yoga, you know, essentials of yoga philosophy that I sometimes don't have a chance to get into with other people. So yoga teaches that suffering can be avoided and identifies five core obstacles to our ability to know our true self. And these five obstacles are called the kleshas in Sanskrit. So Roy Eugene Davis, who was a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda and is the teacher of my teacher, Yogacharya O'Brien, he translates Patanjali's Yoga Sutra 2.3 as some restrictions which can cause suffering and interfere with endeavors to be self-realized and God-realized are egoism, illusion, attachment, aversions, and confusion about birth and death. So as I mentioned, in yoga philosophy, these five obstacles are referred to as the kleshas. How do you describe the kleshas effect on unveiling or difficulty unveiling our inner luminous self?
Yeah, that's also a great question. And I'd love to lean into this translation that I received around the klesha being the seeds of suffering.
Right.
Right. And if we think about this idea of a seed and we continue to water the seed unknowingly, eventually it's going to grow and eventually it's going to produce fruit. And those fruits are going to produce more seeds and more plants and all the things. Right. So we really need to be conscious of the kleshas before we start to get into the weeds, to the point where we don't really know what's happening. And so one of the teachings that I received was that the head of the kleshas is kind of like the avidya, this misperception, this ignorance, right? And that avidya is four-footed. And the other 4 feet are raga, devesha, so attachment and aversion, and abhinivesha, which is fear of death, and ashmita, which is ego. And that you can't really have one of these kleshas without having the other kleshas. So it's not just like, oh, I only have one klesha to worry about. They're all operating at the same time.
Right.
And they all lead to this misperception. And so for me, I feel like it's a practice of self-inquiry to really sit and ask, well, what are the things that I am attached to? Right? What are the things that I feel like I can't live without? And today we could probably say, if we were sitting at a table of a few people, the first thing that we would notice at that table is that everybody has their phone. Either they're holding their phone or maybe they have their phone on the table. Right. And we can see an immediate reaction of what would happen if someone came into the room and said, I'm taking all of your phones and walks out. Mm-hmm. We see and feel that feeling of what does it feel like to be attached to something? And so if we think about just the phone as an example, what is it that we're attached to with the phone? Is it the actual physical phone? Or is it what the phone represents? What have we outsourced to the phone? We've outsourced our memories to the phone. Yeah. We've outsourced pertinent personal information to the phone, connection to the phone, community to the phone, right? So we can look at all the ways in which we are attached. We can think about this idea of aversion, which at its you know, kind of most extreme is like an extreme hatred, right? So we can think about these things of, well, what are the things that you really don't like? What are the things that you hate? And can you trace that back to its origin, right? So if someone says, oh, for instance, and I'm using very benign examples right now, but I don't like sushi, right? Well, why don't you like sushi? And then if you, oh, I just don't like it. And then if you keep digging, you find out that, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, they had food poisoning and they don't like sushi because they got sick from sushi, or there's some other reason somebody told them a something about sushi, or they just don't eat fish or anything with a face. There's all kinds of reasons. Right. But I think that we have to look at how our aversions and how our attachments and how our ego are really keeping us from moving forward on the spiritual path. And then if we really think about the big one that we can all relate to is this fear of death. And when we think about the fear of death, or at least when I think about the fear of death, I really think about this idea that there's always something inside of us that is dying. And there's also something inside of us that's always waiting to be born. And if we really think about this idea that we're not separate from nature, and we look at nature, even just a simple garden, simple potted plant, there's always going to be a cycle of life, death, and rebirth in some way. So I feel like the kleshas to me is a really potent kind of philosophy to start to dig into if we really want to start to become free from suffering.
It's interesting that you brought this up already, but I actually had that quote that you have in the book. You write, yogic teachings describe avidya, which is the first of the kleshas, avidya, as a veil comprising seeds of affliction or kleshas. So you continue describing avidya, saying a meaning not, and vidya meaning knowledge, can also be translated as misperception, mistaking the body, mind, thoughts, emotions, and feelings for the true self with a capital S. There's lots of different translations for avidya. We've already mentioned a couple of them. You know, you mentioned misperception, ignorance, and ignorance meaning ignorance of our true self. So when you, I'd like to, because I am, again, very fond of the idea of talking with you about this and digging a little bit more deeply into these kleshas. So when you talk about the kleshas to your students or in your writing or presentations that you do, how, you know, there's this thing that you already said, which is like the root of all the other kleshas is this avidya. You mentioned that's like the stool that has the four legs, right? So how do you describe that, you know, that root? Why is it considered the root of all the other kleshas?
Well, because we're constantly in avidya. If we're not paying attention, which normally we're not, and we have to acknowledge that the overculture is designed to keep us in distraction, right? That distraction is the, you know, attention right now is the economy. The economy is run on how much of my attention or your attention or our attention can we take? And if you're taking my attention, I'm moving my attention away from what's happening in my inner world to what's happening in the external world. And I'm giving whatever is in the external world more validation and more value than what's happening in my own inner landscape. And so for me, I feel like we are all in avidya to some degree. And I think that if we start there and just admit that, oh, I'm in ignorance, I'm not seeing clearly, and then devote ourselves to some practice, whether it's a micro practice or a long sadhana, that can help us to start to peel back those layers. That to me is what is most important, because if we just acknowledge that we are in misperception, then we can start to see how, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When I think about avidya, And what I have learned about it from Yogacharya O'Brien, you know, through my many years of studying with her, I think about it as kind of the primary mistake. You know, it's our primary forgetting, you know, getting back to the, you know, the four sutras that we talked about of, you know, forgetting who we truly are, you know, and then getting caught up, as you said, in all of this external stuff, you know, that really, you know, goes on in the outer world. And you can see how, you know, that primary forgetting, then you can see the other four that we're going to talk about in a minute are kind of like ways that we further forget. So let me first say, as a reminder to our listeners, today on the Yoga Hour, my guest is Tracy Stanley. The focus of Tracy's teaching is yoga nidra, meditation, self-inquiry, nature as a teacher, and ancestor reverence. She is the author of the book that we're talking about today, The Luminous Self. You can find out more about Tracy Stanley at her website, tracystanley.com. And again, Tracy is with two E's, T-R-A-C-E-E, stanley.com. And you can find the links to her social media on our website, theyogahour.com. We welcome your comments and questions. You can contact us via that website, theyogahour.com, where you can also sign up for our mailing list. So as I mentioned, I'd like us to go deeper into the other four kleshas. So the second klesha, egoism or asmita in Sanskrit, is the false self that we continually forget. We think that we are the ego, that it's our identification with our body and mind. Yet when you really think about it, the body and mind are constantly changing, while the self, capital S self, is unchanging and unchangeable. As Paramahansa Yogananda writes in the Autobiography of a Yogi, the superior method of soul living frees the yogi who, shorn of his ego prison, tastes the deep air of omnipresence. Love his language.
Beautiful.
The superior method of soul living frees the yogi who, shorn of his ego prison, tastes the deep air of omnipresence. So what more would you like to add about asmita, egoism, as an obstacle on the spiritual path?
Well, I don't know what I can add to Paramahansa Yogananda. but I will give an example. You know, one of the things that I notice that happens in circle, at the beginning of, let's say, a workshop or a retreat, when we ask people to introduce who they are to the group, most of the time people will lead with their accolades, with their certifications, with their job titles, with the place where they live. And it really tells us how attached we are. So we're in this raga, and then we're in the ego, right? Of who are you really? How can we keep digging deeper? And that's one of the things that I love to do on retreat and in workshop, is to notice how, as people continue to do the practices and as they get reflections from the Sangha, that slowly, without any prompting, those things start to lift, and there starts to be a deeper resonance with the core essence of who we are. Mm-hmm. And the languaging starts to shift and starts to change. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we're in this place, at least for what I've noticed in my own practice and just kind of life over the years, is that when we're in a shmita, we're really in this place of individualism, mm-hmm. right? And we're not in a place of interconnectedness. We're not in a place of wholeness. We're in a place of separateness. Mm-hmm. And part of that separateness is still attached to the other kleshas. It's still attached to abhinivesha, this fear of death, right? It's still attached to, well, what happens if I lose my job, or, you know, all these things that I think define me, I will become less than if I lose them. And if we think about those types of things, like losing a job or a marriage or a relationship dissolving, they are all little forms of death. They are all forms of something ending. But as I said before, there's always something ending. Mm. it's the cycle of nature, it's the cycle of life. And yet there is also something waiting to be created.
That's a lovely way to hold that. When you were speaking, I was thinking about my own experiences on silent retreat, which I have done intermittently over many years. And what's funny to me about being on silent retreat with people that I don't know is you feel, you know, so here you get together and you can't talk, right? You're together for several days, meditating together, eating together in silence, that kind of thing. And at the end of the retreat, I feel like I know them, even though they haven't said, you know, anything to me. There's like this bond that we have kind of going forward from that. That's very interesting because it doesn't arise, you know, from who they are or like what their title, job title is, or any of their, as you said, their accolades. It's just more of a sense of this shared self, you know, being there in a silent retreat. Have you had that experience?
I have had that experience. And I also am aware that what happens is this is a really interesting way also to look at the kleshas, because the mind wants to make up a story about people when you're not speaking, and also when you're not necessarily having eye contact with people.
Right. Which is that, part, some people don't realize that about silent retreat is you're not, it's not, it's also discouraged to like look in someone's eyes and do like sign language. So you're still, because right. That's still using language.
That's right. And so it's really interesting to see like, oh, what are the stories that I make up about someone? What are the things that I start to not like about someone? Oh, I don't like the way the person is washing the dishes, you know, or putting the dishes away. Or I don't like the way they're taking their mala beads out of the, you know, or they're doing their mala beads. It's too noisy, you know? So all of the different kleshas come up really clearly when you're on a silent retreat, because you get to see how your mind wants to attach to something and how your mind wants to not like something, or where your ego comes in, or how you try to project something onto another person. And then on the last day, or whatever day it might be, where the silence is broken, and you get to realize, oh, hopefully you have enough time to get to that place that you talked about, where you start to feel the essence, because everybody's layers are starting to fall away. Everybody's starting to become more kind of comfortable with the silence and feeling more, especially if you're in a natural environment, feeling more at peace and at one with the natural surroundings. Then right. You start to see the resonance and feel the resonance of someone. Mm-hmm. And then on the last day, when everybody gets to share, you realize, wow, you know, this is, we're so much more similar than we are different.
Right. Right.
And more connected.
Right. You can see some of the stories, like you said, that you made up about that person who was banging the dishes in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Well, I did want to touch again on another two of the kleshas, which we probably should talk about, raga and dvesha, because they're kind of mirror images of each other, you know. So attachments, either a positive attachment, something that we really like, something that's pleasurable, like status, material wealth, relationships, right? Or something that we don't like, you know, which again can be anything that we don't, you know, want to experience. So can you say, talk about raga and dvesha, and why is it that, and maybe this is too simple of a question, but, you know, how do you see them as these obstacles to spiritual clarity?
Yeah, I mean, raga is the things that we are attached to, and we can think about the comforts that we have, right? And how the idea of losing the comfort. So those people who are listening can think about for a moment, what are some of the comforts that you really love, that you like to make sure that you have? What happens to you when you think about not having them? Right? How does it cause you to maneuver your life to make sure that you are going to have those comforts? Mm-hmm. It could be something, you know, we can take something like coffee. I mean, we've all been on the retreat, right? Where there's no coffee, and it's all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, there's no coffee. Right. And how do we handle not having something that brings us so much comfort.
Yeah.
And is this idea of comfort and attachment to our comfort keeping us from the heat of the tapas that we actually need to go through in order to shine? And yeah.
Go ahead.
And we can say the same thing because you mentioned that they're opposite coin, you know, they're the kind of opposite heads of the coin, is that devesha is those things that we avoid at all costs.
Right.
And generally we're avoiding, you know, there's many reasons why we might avoid something, but we have an avoidance or a hatred for something because of past pain.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that past pain to repeat itself. And so it doesn't give us an opportunity to heal that past pain because we're too busy avoiding it and or anything that looks like it or reminds us of it. And mm-hmm. so this is where I think our spiritual practice also meets the idea of connecting with someone who is a really powerful, learned, and trusted therapist as well, because we have to also acknowledge, excuse me, that a lot of times we have to also acknowledge that a lot of times there's trauma and we need assistance or help or support to be able to face that trauma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now we've talked about four of the five kleshas. So in the last one, as you've already mentioned, is confusion about birth and death, or abhinivesha in Sanskrit. In the book you write, we fear the death of our physical self, thinking that is who we are. We fear all the deaths that can happen to us along the road of life, losing a job, losing reputation, the death of loved ones, aging, losing our memory, or ending of the family line or relationships. But I wanted to ask you more specifically about, you know, how this confusion about, it's like, again, it's sort of another way of looking at that first confusion that we talk about, the, you know, the avidya, you know, lack of knowledge. So it's like, we're so identified with these things. We're so identified as that's our true self, that it's hard to see then the, you know, the, to look at it like you do, like you mentioned, like a garden. So would you like to say any more about how abhinivesha is an impediment to remembering who we truly are?
Yeah, I really feel like abhinivesha is the ultimate forgetting of the fact that we are eternal. Mm-hmm. I do think that we're here to remember that. You know, I have an old friend who recently just passed away, and it was interesting because not many people knew that they were ill.
Mm-hmm.
And after the fact, when we found out that this person had passed, one of the people who had been in touch with them had said, oh, they were completely alone in hospice and so scared. And I remember thinking, like, the, you know, it's the aloneness and the scare and being frightened. It just seemed to be so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me wonder, because I knew this person did not have any kind of spiritual life at all. And I do think that it's, if there's no other reason than for the end of our life to be able to know that we are eternal,
mm-hmm.
that it's a reason for us to really be in the place of inquiry mm-hmm. around who are we really? What are we really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is, I always come back to this. Regular listeners may get tired of me quoting this, but my favorite of the verses in the Bhagavad Gita is 240, which is even a little bit of this practice removes great fear. And mm-hmm. to me, that's so true for all the yogic practices that help us really remember who we are. And the more we remember that, the more we can touch into our own wholeness, our own, as you say, the luminous self, our own luminous self, the more we can let go of fear, because
yeah.
it's not, that's not what's going to pass. You know, that is eternal and that unchanging. And, you know, when you tap into that in deep meditation, that's one of the reasons I think it's important to have a steady meditation practice so that you can tap into that again and again and remind yourself. Because we forget.
It's very easy to forget. And I also think that when we're in an established practice, and it should also kind of name that, even though we might have a steady meditation practice, it ebbs and flows. You know, it's like one day the mind is like, oh my gosh, it's so busy, there's so many things. And then the next day, maybe it's complete bliss. And then somewhere in between for the next, you know, month, who knows? Right. But what I would say is that when we consider and work with this klesha of abhinivesha, I think it also helps us with our beloveds. You know, when life starts changing, as it will, that we have a sense of something else holding and supporting us as we move through aging, and we move through life changing, and we move through the inevitability of people passing away. We can hold things in a much different way than when we haven't contemplated these things. That's just my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with you. So I've already mentioned that one of the things I really enjoy about your book is it has so many yoga-based practices, meditations, and self-inquiry questions to help guide us on the inward journey of transitioning, as you say, between what we know and what has not yet become. So I'd like to give the reader a little taste of at least one of the techniques that you share, and the exercise is called the auspicious mind map. So would you describe the concept and process of mind mapping?
Yeah, so just in short, mind mapping is something that was kind of came into prominence, I think, in the 70s. It was also known as radiant thinking. And it's this idea of taking a central or core idea and allowing other ideas to sprout from those places. And so I was introduced to the mind map over 20 years ago. And the mind map then kind of shifted in many different ways. And when I started doing it as a daily practice, I started realizing how powerful it was, and then started to kind of shift it to my own teachings and things that I thought might have been missing from the original mind map that I was taught. And so for me, the mind map starts with the central theme. And the central theme in the luminous self is kind of acquired by doing a practice called the do word. You do that practice and you kind of come up with a word that really is a theme for your life. Not necessarily a theme that you might have even been aware of consciously, but something that you kind of project into your future self, and you're able to come up with this theme that is meaningful for you. And from that theme, we kind of sit with, what are our goals in the future? You know, is there a goal that we have in mind? Is there an obstacle to that goal? Right. We hope that it's going to allow people to do a daily meditation practice. And if you're doing a daily meditation or a daily sit, what was the whisper of the soul that came through? What was the message that came through to you? It might not seem like it makes sense in the moment, but we write it down so that we don't forget, because I feel like we're in this place of collective amnesia. So we need to write these things down. And then how do you serve your community with this central word? So my central word happens to be love. So how do I serve my community with love? What are my obstacles to the goals that I have? And if the last kind of bubble is really, what are the auspicious actions that need to take place in order to be the antidote for the obstacle, for you to heed your whisper of your soul, for you to do something that moves you towards being able to move towards your goal? And then Is there something, because there's another bubble of self-devotion. What is the self-devotion for the day? Mm-hmm. Whether that's just resting, taking a walk in nature. And all of these things, as you do the mind map, really start to come into alignment, and you get to see, is there anything that's not in resonance with this central word? Because I need to infuse everything I do with this word. And it really starts to become very clear after you do it, even just for 7 days, to see, oh, this thing is not in alignment. This relationship is not in alignment. There's something else that wants to come through. And so the mind map is really just a way to move into auspicious action every day, to be able to give yourself some self-devotion, to practice meditation daily, to practice some, you know, free writing and journaling, and to be really, really clear. And people find it to be very helpful. For me, it was one of the practices that I did when I decided that I wanted to work with Oprah. I had Oprah, working with Oprah, in one of my goals. And within a year, I got a phone call saying, hey, Oprah wants you to come on this cruise and teach yoga nidra and meditation to 2,500 women. Wow. And other people have done this practice, and it's been very, very clear that it works, because it's consistent. It's something that we devote ourselves to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great description. And one of the things that you already mentioned, but I wanted to ask you a little bit more about, is this whisper of the soul. Mm. So would you say a little bit more about that? And then you have a soul whisper contemplation that I'd like for you to share with our listeners. But first, just say a little bit more about what that practice entails, whisper of the soul.
Yeah, the whisper of the soul is really this place within us that wants to give us the message. It's our inner knowing. Yeah. That we don't normally stop or pause to acknowledge, because we're so busy. We're so much in the doing, right? That we can't pause to hear it. And sometimes we do hear it, a whisper of the soul, when we're practicing yoga or we're practicing meditation or we're doing a walk in nature. And we could call that an epiphany. We could call it an insight. We could call it a download. There's so many different ways to describe it. But the thing is that we don't take the time to hold it, mm-hmm. and to spend a day living with the whisper of the soul. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, we're so quick to go to the next thing that by the time you get to dinner, if someone were to ask you, well, what was the highlight of your day? You probably would not even remember what the whisper was. Mm-hmm. So this is a way for us to really connect and learn how to not only listen to our inner knowing, but to understand how does our inner knowing come forward? Because for all of us, it's going to be different, even though I call it a whisper of the soul. For some of us, it comes forward as an image. Mm-hmm. It comes forward as a vibration. It comes forward as some other kind of knowing, other than just like hearing some words. But I think for me, my spiritual practice is definitely about listening to that, is being able to listen to that and to pause and to really take it in and live with it for a while, because it's there to give a message. Right. It wants us to listen.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Listening to the still small voice within, or as you said, you know, sometimes it's not a voice, it's, you know, something else, an image or something. So would you share the exercise soul whisper contemplation, which is on page 95?
Yes, I will.
I was hoping that listeners might use it to aid them to tune into their own whispers of the soul. Mm,
yeah. So this is a soul whisper contemplation that really helps you to kind of anchor in to the answer for yourself. What is a soul whisper? Right. So take a moment, if you have the capacity, to soften your gaze or to close your eyes, or just to kind of lean back or just be aware of the space that your body is occupying. Take a moment to recall three times in the past 10 to 20 years where you felt that you had a whisper from the soul, an inner knowing, or an epiphany. How did it come to you? Was the information you received audible, visual, or sensory? If you have the capacity to write now, you can either make a mental note or you can write down the three whispers that you receive from the soul and approximately when they occurred. What were you doing when you received them? Why were they so profound? How did or how does this wisdom help to guide you? And when you have a better sense of how you might connect to your whispers of the soul, you can commit to a daily meditation practice or some other practice that allows you to create an inner opening.
No,
Thank you.
That's really great. I think it's you've just provided listeners with a really great tool. So we're coming toward the end of our time. The book ends with a poem, and I thought it would be lovely to give you a chance to read that. So
yes. Thank you. May we remember who we truly are. May that memory be a healing. May we trust our heart's calling. May we rest in our true nature. May we love each other. May we be free.
Beautiful. And with that, we've come to the end of our time today. In closing, what words of encouragement or inspiration would you like to share with our listeners?
Have the courage to get still, to get to know yourself. Spend time in nature and with beloveds. And when you do that, you will see the openings start to happen. And the synchronicities will start to happen. And your people will start to show up. Thank you, Laura.
Oh, fantastic. For our listeners, you've been listening to the Yoga Hour. It's been my pleasure to share this time with you. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, producer and host of the show. My guest today has been Tracy Stanley, author of the book we are discussing today, The Luminous Self. You can find out more about Tracy Stanley, her books, and online programs at her website, tracystanley.com. Again, Tracy's with a double E. And thank you so much, Tracy Stanley, for joining me today on the Yoga Hour.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here.
For listeners, we hope that you'll join us for the many online programs offered by the sponsor of this program, the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. CSE offers daily online meditation in the morning at 6:30 a.m., in the afternoon at 4 p.m., and on Monday evenings at 7:30 p.m. All those times are Pacific time. There's also a Sunday satsang. Satsang is a Sanskrit word meaning a gathering of truth seekers that happens at 10 a.m. Pacific each week. Listeners to this program may also be interested in another podcast, the Kriya Yoga Today podcast with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, that includes presentations from classes and talks she has given. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts or through the CSE website, csecenter.org. Again, there are so many more classes and events at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. You can find out more about the center and also all those programs by going to the website, csecenter.org. Join us again on an upcoming Yoga Hour when our guest will be author Brian Hyman. We will be discussing his new book on the Yoga of Recovery, How the Deep Philosophical Teachings of Yoga Support Recovery from Addiction. Yoga Hour is a service project of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, a meditation center in the Kriya Yoga tradition. Remember, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying it, share it with a friend. Thank you to the Yoga Hour team, founder and spiritual director Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, assistant producers Anne Hayes, Mickey Coronado, Christine Soate, and Lauren Leidinger. I look forward to being with you again. Until then, remember, you carry your own healing and wholeness within you. Share your peace and joy with all you meet. Bye now.